Good morning. I'd like to take us from where our scripture reading was back to Psalm 41. This is what Jesus is quoting. A month ago, we began to look at the Psalms. Remember, the Psalms challenge us to meditate upon their meaning as we go about our life. The Psalms are wonderfully simple in some respects. Their imagery and their metaphor are things that very simply stay in our mind. We can hold them in our mind as we go about our day, but they're also poetic. Poetry is something that you don't read and understand the first time you read it. You have to carry it with you as you go throughout your day and dwell upon its meaning. You have to ruminate over what has been said. You have to meditate to make something good out of it. Remember the cow who eats the grass and chews on the grass and swallows the grass? Where does the grass go next? Comes back up into its mouth again. And it chews on it some more. It needs to regurgitate what it has already taken in order to make something useful of it. It needs to spend time further chewing on what it has already eaten in order for it to be useful. It needs to process it and mull it over additionally. So I want to give you something to chew on today. We're going to go back to the Psalms. As you're driving in your car, as you're lying waiting for sleep to come at night, as you're waiting in line, as you're sitting in a waiting room, before you engage in a time-killing behavior, hopefully I can give you something to chew on during these moments of quiet. If you haven't already turned over to Psalm 41, let's go there together. Oftentimes what occupies our mind in these quiet moments are unresolved circumstances we have in our life, things that lead to confusion. Psalm 41 talks about David and his life, and some scholars consider Psalm 41 to be a bit of a summary of the first 41 Psalms in the book as a whole. Psalms is broken up into five different books. The 150 Psalms are broken up into separate books. And though each Psalm can stand on its own, Psalm 41 is a bit of a summary over the beginning of David's life. Now, what caused David confusion and unresolved conflict over the first part of much of his life? Well, he had this man who he couldn't do anything to, and yet he caused him great trouble. King Saul was the Lord's anointed king, and David honored that, and yet Saul wanted to hurt David. And so Psalm 41 is a bit of a memory back through David's early life. It's a bit of a remembrance over times when he has seen people who are in need and who need mercy and who are poor, and he shows them mercy. And yet at the same time, he remembers back through his life when he was the poor man, when he needed mercy, when he needed someone to look upon him, and yet his enemies took advantage of him in that moment. He considers the poor and is kind to him, and yet when he is sick and poor, he doesn't receive the same mercy. The Psalms are so appropriate for this type of situation because those are emotional times, aren't they? When you know, I have been good to these people who are less fortunate than me, and yet I'm not receiving the same mercy. Doesn't that create deep, unsettling emotions inside of you? Can't that lead you to frustration and anger? The Psalm today shows us how we can show mercy to the troubled, even when we ourselves are denied mercy in our time of need. And so David goes back through, it's sort of like a memory, it's almost like a dream, as David goes back in Psalm 41, and he thinks back over times in his life when he showed mercy to those who were in great need. Think back with me over the early David's life. Think about Jonathan, Saul's son. Jonathan, as the son of the king, should have been someone with great power and authority. He should have been heir to the kingdom after Saul died. And yet, who was anointed after Saul? It wasn't Jonathan, it was David. So Jonathan was a bit of a lame duck king. He thought he was going to have the authority, but he didn't have any authority. And so he goes to David, which doesn't make any sense because David should have wiped out all of Saul's descendants. Isn't that what happens when families are vying for the kingship? The king who has been deposed, his family gets wiped out, and yet Jonathan comes to David in his need, and David loves him. David shows kindness to them. They develop a deep friendship. David shows mercy and consideration to the poor. Who's someone else in David's life who she has shown kindness to? Jonathan has a son whose name is Mephibosheth. Perhaps an odd name. But Mephibosheth is not only a son of Jonathan, which means he really has no authority, but he also was hurt as a young child, and now his legs don't work properly, and he's handicapped. So he's poor on two accounts. He has no authority, and he's handicapped, and he can't run away. And yet David, in this beautiful moment, after Jonathan has died, he says, "Find someone from Jonathan's house who I may show kindness toward. Find someone from the house of my enemy who I can show kindness and mercy toward." Another instance, early in David's life, he's driven out into the caves. There's one cave called the Cave of Adullam. I don't know if it was Adullam's cave or if that was the name of an area or what it was known. But the people who came to David at the Cave of Adullam knew they were coming to find mercy. The people who came to see David in this cave were people who had been distressed and who were in debt and who had been rejected. The English Standard Version says that they were bitter in soul. And yet when someone who is bitter in soul and who needs mercy comes to a man of God, guess what they find? They find mercy and they find understanding and they find compassion. Perhaps you're thinking about the story of Abigail. Abigail is beautiful and intelligent and wealthy, and yet she's married to a fool. His name means fool. And David is going to come, and he's not going to show mercy to them. He's going to wipe everyone out. And yet Abigail comes to David because she knows if you go to a man of God, you find mercy and you find compassion and you find understanding. Read with me Psalm 41, verses 1 through 3. "Blessed is the one who considers the poor. In the day of trouble, the Lord delivers him. The Lord protects him and keeps him alive. He is called blessed in the land. You do not give him up to the will of his enemies. The Lord sustains him on his sick bed. In his illness, you restore him to full health." Blessed is the one who considers the poor. Blessed to find joy, to find not just joy, but joy that can't be taken, that can't be destroyed. If God is blessing and bestowing his joy upon someone, he's saying, I don't care whatever else has happened, but you are mine. Regardless of everything you have done and anyone else has done, you are mine. And that cannot be taken away from you. Blessed is the one who considers the poor. Blessed is the one who thinks and then who acts with mercy toward those who are less fortunate. They wisely consider and they have a fellow feeling, a sort of sympathy for the poor's sorrow. This is the blessed person. This is who David was. This is who the man of God was throughout his life. When he came upon someone who was poor, whether they were physically sick or whether they were spiritually weak or materially poor or powerless or lost, when David came to them, he wisely considered them. He did not raise his heel against them. And so he's going back through these memories, and he contrasts it with times, and his symbolism here is being sick. A lot of us know what it's like to be sick. We've had the experience, perhaps just in the last month, many of us have been down on our sick bed, and we want nothing else than to someone to come, just take care of me, right? Just come and see after my needs and help me, because I can't do anything for myself. I can't even walk down the hallway without being dizzy and not feeling well. And yet his memory is not that people come and attend to him when he is sick. In the balance here of Psalm 41, his memory of people coming, they come to mock him and to find out about his condition and then to go spread rumors about him and saying he's going to die. He's so sick, he's not going to make it. They take advantage of him. Kings can be poor as well. And he remembers how his enemies treated him when he was poor. When David came upon those who were sick, he had compassion. But when his enemies come upon him sick, they do not show the same consideration. David had particular trouble with the giants of the Philistines. When he was a young and inexperienced man, he came upon Goliath. Goliath didn't show him any kindness. Later in his life, when he's an old man, he's out fighting and he becomes tired and he becomes weary and he's about to collapse, and this other giant comes and is going to take advantage of him in his weakness. But you expect that from your enemies, right? You expect your enemies to take advantage of you when you are weak. But what's really challenging, what is really hard, what this psalm expresses in its emotion toward God is when a close friend comes, someone who you have shared a meal with, when they come and they don't show you the kindness that you need in your time of weakness. This was his dilemma with Saul. Could David go to Saul and find mercy there? Saul was a man that he loved and that he treated well throughout his life, and yet Saul tried to pin him to the wall with a spear. But David couldn't do anything about him, and so he's struggling back and forth. I have this enemy, and I've had opportunities to get rid of this enemy, and yet he's God's chosen, and I can't do anything. What do I do with these emotions and these feelings and this anger that's inside of me? I'm stuck with where I'm at. It's hurtful when one of God's people can do this to us. David feels the anguish of this, but not just when one of God's people does it. Sometimes it can feel even worse when one of our own family does it, as Absalom does. Absalom was one of David's sons and perhaps could have been one of the next kings, and yet Absalom does awful, terrible, horrible things to David, as we have heard about in recent weeks. Psalm comes and defiles the women in his house, and Absalom comes and he kills and he runs away, and he's just this troubled youth, and he ends up, he has so much hair, he gets caught in this tree with all of his hair. He gets jerked off of his horse in this tree, and he ends up dying with spears in his chest and run through with a sword. But what is David supposed to do when this is his own son, his own flesh and blood? He who is merciful is now afflicted. The one who shows kindness and compassion to those who need it is now in himself in a spot of weakness. Let's read verse 4 through 9 together. As for me, I said, O Lord, be gracious to me, heal me, for I have sinned against you. My enemies say of me in malice, when will he die and his name perish? And when one comes to me, he utters empty words, while his heart gathers iniquity. When he goes out, he tells it abroad. All who hate me whisper together about me. They imagine the worst for me. They say, a deadly thing is poured out on him. He will not rise again from where he lies. Even my close friend, in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted his heel against me. If you read through the Psalms, it doesn't take you long before you come upon harsh statements that David and others make towards his enemies. And here he is describing the kind of circumstance that drives him to make not just these statements of mild displeasure, well, these people sort of annoy me. No, these are passionately angry phrases. He almost has unbridled frustration because of his despair and his deep hopelessness. Notice what David wants to happen. Now, as we're going to talk about here in a moment, he doesn't do this thing, but notice what he wants to happen. And notice where you have to be, the place you have to be emotionally in order to say these things against another person. Psalm 3:7. For you strike all my enemies on the cheek, you break the teeth of the wicked. What kind of hopeless place do you have to be to wish that someone will get their teeth busted out and their cheekbone broken? Psalm 35, contend, O Lord, with those who contend with me. Fight against those who fight against me. Psalm 35, 4 through 8, a paraphrase. It says, let these people be put to shame. Let them be dishonored. Let them be turned back. Let them be disappointed. Let them be like chaff. Let them be driven away. Let them be on a dark and slippery place. Let them be pursued by the Lord's angel. mean, can you imagine wishing that upon another person, to wish that the Lord would pursue them and grant them no success in what they do? Psalm 21, aim at their faces with your bow. Psalm 10, 15, break their arm. How do we understand what David is doing here? Because if the Psalms are supposed to be our expression toward God, if this is supposed to be teaching us how we speak to God and how we think rightly about God, then what do we do with these phrases of extreme emotion and extreme action? Let's understand what David is doing in these Psalms. Psalm 41, verse 10. But you, O Lord, be gracious to me and raise me up, that I may repay them. But this I know, that you delight in me. My enemy will not shout in triumph over me. First of all, David is expressing and channeling the full range of his emotions to God. You know, sometimes we are afraid and we don't know what to do with our emotions. We're afraid to express them because of where it might lead us to. But these Psalms here give David an avenue to express what is in his heart to God. God says, I would rather you pick up the pen and write about this than pick up the sword and do something that you will later regret. I would rather that you write a lament to me in the strongest language you know than to deny the anguish of your heart to your own destruction. This is how David harnesses his anger and his emotion and his frustration, and then he expresses it to God, who is big enough and who is able to handle it. So we know that we can use this in the same way. But what about the actions that David is? Is David commanding God? Is he saying, hey, go do this to them, God? Is God over here minding his own business? And David says, look at the evil. And God says, oh, I didn't know that was there. Okay, I guess I'll go do what you have asked me. It's not a button launching a missile into these people, all right? He's letting off steam, but he's not commanding God to do something. He's reminding himself of what God has already said that he's going to do within his covenant. Remember, David was under the old covenant, under the Old Testament. And way back in Genesis, but more explicitly in Exodus and Leviticus, God says, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. Especially in the case of Saul and Absalom, who knew better, who were within the covenant, God was very explicit, saying, this is what is going to happen if you disobey the things that I have given. And so David isn't exacting his vengeance upon them. He is saying, God, I need you to be true to what you have already told me. God is going to be true to what he has already told him. I need to remind myself that you are going to be true to what you have already said. David's triumph, his repayment to his enemies, is to endure and not be overcome by evil. God's vengeance is not some kind of reaction. It's not some kind of gut reaction. It's a promised punishment with the full perspective of what is going on. See, if God goes and if he does something to people, God knows where their situation is at. He knows where they're at. He knows what they have done. But even if he comes upon them and does something to them physically, it is still within God's realm to decide what he is going to do with them in eternity. Even when God punishes an entire nation, those who are innocent within that nation can still be with him in eternity. That is his prerogative to take. So we've observed what David has gone through. We've touched on how he is pleading with God through God's word and through his covenant to be true to what he has already said. He's reminding himself of that. He's reminding himself that when facing someone troubling in our weakness, this is what he prays. This is what you say. This is what you go through in your mind. So how about you? Have you ever been where David is at? And how do you repay those who afflict the afflicted? A preacher tells a story once that happened right around the beginning of the 1960s. There was a young psychiatrist named Robert Coles, and he came across a six-year-old girl named Ruby Bridges. She lived in New Orleans. Remember, the U.S. government had just ordered the desegregation of schools, And Cole saw this little black girl being escorted to Franz Elementary School, but she was being escorted by federal marshals because each day, angry, screaming, and threatening people lined the streets, and they were only barely held back by the local police. Ruby was the only student at this school, and Coles began to talk to the teacher and to visit the Bridges home a couple times a week. One time the teacher said, "You know, I thought of you today, Mr. Coles." The teacher was speaking to the psychiatrist. He said, "I thought of you. I was looking out the window," and she stopped right in front of the mob. It was the first time that she had ever done that, and she started talking to them. And they went wild. They surged at her, and they were going to get her. The marshals had to draw their guns in order to keep them back. The marshals were pulling her to get into the building, and she wouldn't move. She kept talking, and they screamed louder and louder. Finally, she stopped, and they were able to get her inside the building. And they said to her, "Don't do that again." So the teacher said to her, "Ruby, what did you say to them?" She said, "I didn't say anything to them." She said, "Oh, I saw your lips were moving. You must have said something to them." She said, "I didn't say anything to them." And so the teacher let it go, knowing that Coles was going to go over to the Bridges house that evening. In the kitchen that evening, Coles was speaking with Ruby, and she was drawing. He asked her how she was doing, and she said, "I'm doing fine." He said, "I know that you're doing fine, but I heard something today that worried me, and it worried your teacher." "What was it?" Ruby wanted to know. Cole said, "You said something to the mob that got the marshals and the teacher upset. Were you upset?" Ruby said, "No, I wasn't upset." Cole said, "You said something to the people that got them upset." Ruby said, "I didn't say anything to those people. I was saying a prayer." "You were saying a prayer?" Coles echoed. "What kind of a prayer?" "Well, a prayer for those people." He says, "Why would you want to pray for these people who have said so many ugly and nasty things to you?" Ruby said, "Well, don't you think they need a prayer?" "Yeah," Cole said slowly. "What was the prayer about?" She said, "I always say the same thing." "What was that?" Coles asked. "Please, God, try to forgive these people because they don't know what they're doing." See, Ruby had an arrangement with the marshals that she would pray this prayer every time several blocks before she got to the schoolhouse. That particular morning, she had forgotten, and she only just remembered before she got there. How did she know to pray such a prayer? Where did she get this from? Her parents were sharecropping stock from Mississippi. Neither of them could read or write. Her father worked as a janitor, and her mother scrubbed offices at night. But they taught their daughter that Christ prayed this prayer when he was facing a mob who was screaming at him. So what do you say to people when they visit you on your sickbed and they take advantage of you in your weakness? Thank God that Ruby had parents and psychiatrists and marshals protecting her, holding back the angry mob. But you know, it all has meaning because of what she prayed to that angry mob. In her innocence, she knew that those who afflicted her were in fact the poorest of all. Those who came and sought to take advantage of her were the ones who needed this kind of prayer the most. Now, please don't put this off as something that is weak or that it is easy to do. She's the one who had to get up and pray this prayer every day. She's the one who decided to stop in the middle of the crowd and to say these words in her mind to them. This is more than some trick of psychiatry or some counseling technique where you, "Okay, I'm going to count to 10 before I say something that I shouldn't," or "I'm going to take a deep breath and I'm going to calm down." What this is doing is it's taking the emotions that are in us. Realize how strongly David felt in the Psalms as you read them. It's taking something that could turn into venom, and it could turn into something that is damaging, and it's acknowledging all of this within us. It's acknowledging this emotion, and then it's giving it to God as the only one who can handle it. Think about it right now. Try forgiving someone who has horribly wronged you or one of your loved ones. It's not so easy, is it? And maybe we can't quite pray for these people like Ruby did. Maybe we don't have the innocence that she did. But we have to find a way as David says in verse 10, to be raised up so that we can repay them according to God's will and wisdom. Because if we unleash the thoughts and the emotions and the anger that we have upon people, we may do irreparable damage. We may return evil for evil, and that's not what God wants. We have to do it according to God's will. This is what Jesus did in John 13, 12 through 20, as he touched the feet of the very man who was going to betray him. He could have called 10,000 angels, but he took it to the Father. And so if we want to be raised up to repay, then we need to give it to God. We need to put down our sword, and we need to pick up our pen, and we need to write these thoughts out and pray them to God. We need to call up a friend, and rather than saying, let me tell you what this person did to me, we say, listen, I don't need to tell you anything. I need you to pray with me right now. I need you to help me take these things to God right now. God delights and is big enough to handle all of this. And so to those who bless the poor and endure affliction, remember those, and have the words of the Psalms. If you don't know how to pray like Ruby did, then go to a psalm and have that prepared in your mind for when you face this situation. When you pass by those who trouble you in your weakness, take it to God in a psalm. Give it to God. You can only give it to God if you are one of His children. We offer that opportunity for you today. If you need to give your life to Christ, if you need to come and remove the sin from your life that is separating you from Him, then do so. Please come forward while we stand and sing together.